Jim Kawakami, the editor-in-chief of the very athletic Bay Area. Jim Kawakami.
Tim Kawakami, who's covered the NBA for over two decades, and more specifically the Golden State Warriors over the last 12 years.
This is the TK Show.
Hey everybody, Tim Kawakami here, TK Show, recording from the home studio with my good friend Janelle Hamabata, who's here to help me on a voicemail mailbag episode. If I can pronounce it correctly, she'll be pronouncing words far better than I can, I promise. Janelle's here to help out. Janelle's got the questions. She's a longtime friend of mine, and she knows me quite well. So we'll see how this goes. Janelle, how are you doing today, by the way?
I'm wonderful. Thanks for having me on the TK Show.
Oh my God. She is a listener. She is someone
honor.
who provides frequent ways to improve the show, topics we should talk about, many other things you might hear about throughout the show. A large, interesting, impassioned sports fan, except for she has noted, like on some of these questions she doesn't care about, but she will be reading them with great emphasis. She will be making me like answer honestly and correctly. I know that. That's why I brought Janelle on here. Janelle, thank you for coming. Anything you want to start? These are questions I should point out that I sought out via Threads, which I want to give prominent place to, and my Google voicemail, which I'm doing this because they kept warning me that we weren't using it enough, so they were going to deactivate it. So you know what? Let's do a voicemail podcast. Let's get some questions. You had very good questions. Most of them came before last weekend, so might not reflect the events of last weekend. There were several, but I will add my little update to the questions, I think, to my answers since the weekend. There are things that have happened. So Janelle, you ready to fire away? What's the first question?
Well, I'm going to say one thing. I'm no Barros and I'm no Dylan Hernandez. I will do my best. I will do my best, Tim. All right. First question. Here we go, Tim. You ready?
Yeah, you're better than Dylan and Matt, by the way. I want to point that out right away, but let's go.
Okay. The first question comes from Steve via your Google voicemail. Mm-hmm. Does Kyle Shanahan need an offensive coordinator, or at least the very least, a refresh in the way that he approaches his offense? When you look at what his former assistants are doing, it doesn't bog down like the Niners do. Bobby Slowick in Houston in particular.
Great question. I mean, listen, when Kyle Shanahan loses as many assistants as he's had, Slowick being one of them, Mike McDaniel, I think, is the key one, now head coach in Miami. There's going to be things that he has to adjust. There's going to be some changes. But I think he's the guy who he started this. The Michael Silver book on kind of the Kyle Shanahan era of coaching and all these guys, Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur and the guys who've come up underneath them, like things are going to change. I do think he's been pretty basic this year, but I don't think it's about assistants. I think Clay Kubiak, who Shanahan has kind of lifted up higher than some of the other guys, is kind of interesting to me that he had him call plays during the preseason, which he never did with Mike McDaniel. It was like the guy who was with him through so much. I think Clay Kubiak is fine. I think Shanahan has been a little tighter to the vest this season without Christian McCaffrey. Janelle might have some thoughts on Christian McCaffrey, but I think there's just been kind of a, like, he's had a little like one arm tied behind his back because he can't really throw those passes to the running backs that are so vital to this offense, specifically when McCaffrey's in there.
Jeff
Wilson in the past and other people. So, well, when McCaffrey's back, we'll see when that is. Feeling like that's going to be in a couple weeks. I think maybe you'll see a little more of the misdirection, the stuff that he can do with McCaffrey and Debo. I do think it's less about losing the assistants than him feeling like we just got to be pretty basic or let Purdy do it again, which is different for a Shanahan offense. He rarely lets the quarterback be the kind of primary focus. One time in 2016 when Matt Ryan won the MVP with the Falcons when Shanahan was the OC. But I think it's more about not having McCaffrey more than anything. And Andy Reid gets highly, you know, acclaimed for his fancy red zone stuff. You know, he does all these motions and shifts. But, you know, over the last few years, the Chiefs have not been a good red zone team. It's about being able to run the ball. It's about being able to do the stuff that you do really well, which is what really Shanahan believes in. You can trick them once in a while, but do the stuff that you do really, really well, so well the defense has to overcompensate. Then you do something else. They haven't really been able to do that without McCaffrey. Here's the thing, though. They're averaging 6.5 yards per play offensively this season, second in the NFL behind only Baltimore, and that's without McCaffrey. So it's not like things have been bad. They just haven't been great in the red zone. They were on Sunday night. Maybe that will continue, or of course will be better when McCaffrey's in there. Janelle, raise your hand. Well, you got a question for me.
Well, first of all, yes, it's very disappointing, McCaffrey.
Who drafted
being a first draft pick, and I can't even play him. It's been like now we're going on by 9 weeks, and I would also say like you guys need to stop getting injured.
Like, my guys,
49ers injuries. The 49ers injuries. It's just I think that's just been kind of a
story of the season. It's been a story.
Yeah,
been a story of the season. McCaffrey, like we all thought he might play week one. I think the 49ers thought that. I might have advised somebody who had the first pick in her very important draft to take Christian McCaffrey. And I might have heard about this every freaking week since then. But the person is a dear, dear friend. So I do not mind hearing about it.
Well, now I got the advice to I picked up Purcell.
Purcell, yeah. I think that Purcell. One might turn out okay. Like, you know,
and I have Purdy. So, yeah. Tim, I got
it. I did not advise you to do that one. I did not advise you to do that one. But you do love that little quarterback to receiver combination. I kind of.
Yes. So wish me luck. That was your tip.
Yeah, let's see if that goes through the season. I think that Pearsall's going to play. He's the third receiver. He's basically Juwan Jennings will move into the number two role, one role, whatever, the Ayuk role. And I think Pearsall's going to move into the Jennings role as the third receiver. So we'll see. Yeah, if Pearsall doesn't play real well, that's fine for me as a writer, but I'm going to hear about it from somebody on this StreamYard call. Believe me.
That was your suggestion on Friday, okay? All right, I'm going to ask you the next one. We're going to stick with the 49ers here. The next question comes from Hooks from Sacramento on Google Voicemail. What's the likelihood of the Niners tried to trade Deontay Johnson or Tyler Boyd? They both have 1 year left on the contract, so it'd be like a rental, and I think they're good players.
Yeah, those are two wide receivers. I think both – I mean, I think probably Deontay Johnson's more available from the Carolina than Tyler Boyd would be available, but I don't see the 49ers making a move for receiver. They could. You know, they could use some depth there, but they do have those two rookies, Ricky Pearsall now active and looking pretty solid, and Jacob Cowing is kind of a depth guy. They drafted those guys for a reason. They've invested in them. Sure, there could be other injuries. Sure, they could use depth. I always emphasize depth, because guys can get hurt. You never are fully healthy. But I don't think that's their pressing need. I think knowing Shanahan and John Lynch, they are going to want an edge, a pass rusher or two. This is just what they do. Chase Young and Randy Gregory last season. They have Charles Omenihu 2 years ago. This is just what they do. I think they've let some other guys kind of pass through, you know, receivers have gone through DeAndre Hopkins, Amari Cooper been traded, others, Devontae Adams. I just don't know that receivers where the big need is. You've got Debo, you've got Juwan Jennings, you've got Ricky Pearsall, you got Jacob Cowing. They have, you know, Chris Conley, my guy, Ronnie Bell, not my guy, but they've got guys. I don't know that you want to spend what it would take to get a surefire upgrade there. I think the upgrade for sure in depth is going to be at edge. I expect them to make a move or two for defensive end. That's what I would say.
Before November 5th?
Yeah, trade deadline's November 5th.
They're pretty quick.
Yeah, 49ers on the bye now, so they can kind of look at this as a trade line right now because they're not playing another game until then. Or maybe they wait a week and do it right at the deadline. Maybe they, you know, since they're not a game, do you really want to acquire a guy going into the bye? Yeah, we'll see. But I think that they'll do something. This is a team that could use something because more people could get hurt, Janelle. We know that's a story.
I know. It's every week. I'm like, no.
Every week somebody. But that's the NFL story. This injuries are the way of life. You have to deal with it. Now, listen, one more major one. Say if it's like, you know, Bosa, Purdy.
No, that's not even named the names.
Yeah. It would be bad. That might be it. They're right at the extent of the major guys. But they can survive this and see what happens. Try to get hot and then try to be somebody nobody wants to play in the playoffs. If they can survive this, I think they could use one more defensive end or edge, you know, line pass rushing linebacker. That's what I would look for them to make at least one of those moves.
All right. Okay, we're going to transition from the 49ers to the Giants. Our next question comes from KMFPEZY. We'll call you KMFPZ on Threads.
Yeah, you should.
I think that's what it looks like. Peasy. Okay, does Buster Posey look at teams like the Dodgers who spend mountains of money and obtain success and think, quote, this should be the Giants? And would that conflict with ownership?
Yeah, that's good. We don't know what Buster Posey is going to do. New president of baseball operations. This is his show. I know him a little bit. Don't really know what his personnel process is going to be. He hasn't hired a general manager yet. I don't think Posey's in this to be a wild spender. I think they got a little scared about what Farhan Zaidi, who is not a wild spender, but might do if he's, you know, kind of playing for his job. Would he turn the whole thing over to Scott Boras? Already signed Jung-Hoo Lee, a Boras client. You know, just did Matt Chapman, a Boras client. Blake Snell, a Boras client. Do you just turn it over him and just write him blank checks? Other teams have done this. I don't think Buster Posey's that kind of guy. Not a Scott Boras client, underline. I think he will want big names. He will want stars. He was a big star. They are lacking in this, but I just don't think it's going to be blank check. Just let's go spend $180 million on a number four starter. I just don't see that. I don't see Blake Snell quite fitting into the Buster mentality. I think Buster is a guy, show up, play hard, be a good teammate. I'm not saying Snell isn't that. I'm just saying he didn't start the last game of the year. And I think that kind of reverberated through the Giants building. I just don't feel like Buster Posey is quite on with that. We'll see. They're going to want talent. They need talent. They need stars. That they should be in on Soto if they have any thought that they can be, whether that's going to be $600 million or whatever. That I don't think they'll get them, but I think they'll be in those discussions. Posey was in the discussions for Shohei Ohtani. I think he was in there for some several other big name recruitments. He didn't land them, but it's not like he was saying, hell of that. That's not good for the Giants. And also the other thing to remember is he's part of the ownership group. So when they were signing off on Zaidi bidding, you know, they would have matched the Ohtani deal. They just weren't going to get him because he wanted to play for the Dodgers. They would have matched the Yamamoto deal. I think that was $400 million. They made the huge offer, $350 million, to Carlos Correa. Posey wasn't an owner there, but he was kind of moving in that direction for Correa. He was an owner recently for Ohtani and Yamamoto. They want a star. They do want to start. I just don't think they're going to be blank check. Let's be the Mets. Let's be the Yankees. Let's be the Dodgers. It'll be a little more targeted, a little more thoughtful, I would say. But again, we don't know. Maybe Posey will go crazy.
Maybe you'll get Soto.
Yeah.
Coming off the World Series, you know, who knows?
That would be their number one. It would be great for them. I don't think that he is going to go to the Giants, but I think that part does limit them with hitters. And I think Posey's aware of this. Hitters want to hit 50 home runs, and it's very hard to do that if you're playing 81 games at Oracle Park, unless you're Barry Bonds. And then maybe there were some other things involved with
yeah, a little extra, you know,
a little bonus there.
Tim, can you explain the difference now between the president of baseball operations and having a GM?
Yeah, well, the president of baseball, yeah, that's Farhan Zaidi. Yeah, it's kind of they're moving it around a little bit. Like the old days, the GM was the shot caller, the guy, the person who made every decision. But things have gotten so complicated financially and with the agents and the just the payroll concerns that they kind of made the number one guy the president of baseball operations. He's kind of oversees everything.
Okay.
He has a general manager. He or she has a general manager who kind of does the daily stuff because it's just so overwhelming. The roster moves. All the keep in touch with the minor league affiliates and the agents and keep a track of the draft. And, some teams just do it with one person, a GM, an assistant GM. The way it's developed, these teams are so big now. They have so many other concerns that they've gone to the guy who used to be the general manager, the guy who used to call the shots, is now the president of baseball operations. Okay. And that person kind of sets up the front office underneath him or her. And that's what Posey is, kind of the oversight, not the daily, like talk to the agent for the backup catcher to make sure he's feeling good. More like I'm overseeing it. And I get involved with anything I want to, but I also have someone else who can do the all the little roster stuff, the mechanism, you know, the dealing with the 26-man roster, guys up, guys down, guys hurt, you know, have someone else who can do all the daily. So they have, and they'll be assistant GMs. I mean, teams have two or three or four assistant GMs sometimes. The Giants only had one, I recall, maybe two. But we'll see how Buster sets it up. But given his lack of experience in any front office, I think he will have many people there to help him. I think, you know, whatever titles they have, I think Nick Hundley, his friend, former catcher, will have a role. I think Pat Burrell, who's now the batting coach, but hitting coach, whatever you call it, will have some kind of role. I think Brian Sabian, the old general manager, president of baseball operations, when they won all those championships, if he wants to, will have a role. We'll see, but I don't think the Giants are going to just go in there saying, let's just go sign everybody. That's the one thing I don't think. And I don't think it's going to be just sign Scott Boras clients. I feel strongly about that. It gets a little worrisome, like kind of when you're counting on the future of your franchise via Scott Boras. And I think the Giants kind of want to avoid that. Good question, Janelle. I like that. Good question.
I was curious, you know, that's all these new titles. And
the president of baseball operations, Janelle Hamabata, everybody.
Okay, we're moving on to Warriors. This question comes from Wong PMO on Threads. How will Steve Kerr's insistence on playing a 12-man rotation play in Boston next week?
Yeah, that obviously question was asked before Steph Curry's ankle injury. That will change some things, but no, it's still adaptable. I think they will lean on their depth for sure. With Steph out, I mean, I think he's only out a couple of games, but maybe more might linger into the road trip after these two games against the Pelicans coming up at home. But you do this partly for this, is you have players who haven't just been sitting around, who have been playing, who have been counted on, who don't feel like Kerr turned away from them. A big part of this 12, he knows 12-man rotation is tough to do, to find minutes for all these guys. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't want to lose anybody. He doesn't want to lose someone who isn't playing anymore. No, you don't have any faith in me. They have nobody to replace Steph Curry, obviously. Nobody could replace Steph Curry. You might have some other options to try to run it out there. DeAnthony Melton, Brandon Pajemski are the two people who are going to get much more responsibility. They're good players. I don't think they're, you know, we'll see what they can put together. They have more options for this than maybe they've had in the past. It won't look the same. They're going to have, I think they might have to juggle around that starting lineup, because so much of it is built around what Steph can do, Steph can uniquely do. But that's why Kerr went with the 12-man rotation to start, was he doesn't want to lose anybody mentally. Jonathan Kuminga, I think, is the number one. Like, he wasn't going to go out of the rotation, but putting him in the starting lineup kind of triggered all this other stuff, because you can't really play him for 36 minutes at small forward. So then you need other people to play small forward. You need other wings. You need, it just trickles around for stuff like this. If Steph's going to miss a bunch of games, if Draymond's going to miss some games, you want guys who are attuned to the kind of mood, who are, you know, feeling good about themselves, who have been playing, who can now step into larger roles. Maybe it's a 12-man rotation without Steph, probably down to 11. Maybe, you know, Lindy Waters, who's kind of been 13th place. They kind of do need the shooting, so I could see that. We'll see how it all works. It might mean a little decreased role for Gary Payton second, because he plays so well with Steph. That's how he gets his minutes, because he and Steph are fantastic together. No Steph in there. GP2 has a lot of talent, has a lot of value, maybe a little less than he does if Steph is out. We'll see. I mean, Kerr's got a lot of options. Again, the reason why he started the season with 12, even though it's unwieldy, is that he wants all 12 to feel a part of this. And now he's going to need some extra people to play larger roles.
It seems like a really smart approach, because it's seamless if you have like an injury, like Steph has to get out.
Yeah. If you can do it,
ruin it a little bit. But yeah, but I mean, if you have 12 players engaged throughout the season, then it's not as much of a disruption.
Yeah, you've never told them, I don't believe in you, right? They've never felt I can't go to you. It's hard because you know, some guy's going to play 4 minutes or 6 minutes and they don't like that. So I don't think this is workable throughout the entire season, probably not too much longer in this season, but this is why he did it. This is right exactly why he did it, is to have if somebody goes down, it's not like seven guys who feel trusted. It's 11 other guys feel trusted. And you can go pick one of them, go, okay, now you're going to play 36 minutes. What can you do for me?
How often do you see this throughout the league?
12-man rotation? Almost never. Almost
okay,
never.
That's
really it's really hard. Yeah, nobody in the playoffs. Nobody who's any good. It's just, it's hard to find, you know, guys like to have a routine. They like to know, okay, if I played two bad minutes, I'm not coming right out and that's it. And that's my night. Give me 8 minutes.
Give me a chance.
Yeah. Give me a, you know, don't let me like just feel like I'm in and out. Give me a roll. Give me at least 14, 16 minutes. It's hard to find that for 12 guys. It really is. But Kerr's trying to do it. And it looked really good for the first two. Didn't look so great for the third. You know, you kind of are exposed if two of those guys aren't playing real well and they're in the middle of a really important moment and then you lose the game. Kind of happened, yeah. You know, obviously stepping out in the second, most, a lot of the second half affected that game. But if you got a lot of good players and they're patient and they understand it, it's a way to do it at least for a little while. And again, Curry being out is exactly the reason why Kerr's trying to do this, to have everybody feel like a part of this, and we'll see what they do.
Okay, Tim, we all want to feel like we have a purpose in life.
We do. Janelle, do you feel like you have a purpose? Your purpose is great and grand and only expanding.
Okay, I'm moving on with the same with the Warriors, okay? One more from Go Bears 1986 via threats. The Clippers got nothing for Paul George. What was the calculus in not taking the Warriors' offer? Was it too much long-term money?
Yeah, the money, I think, was a big deal. If the Clippers were going to have Paul George leave them, they did not want to get back into a bad money mess. They did not want, you know, the second apron long-term. And would it really make them better if they took Jonathan Kuminga or if they took Andrew Wiggins or if they took any other kind of assemblage? But it was the money had to be to match for the Warriors to be able to do it. I just don't think if they, once they made the decision, they weren't given Paul George a fourth year, then they didn't want money back for, you know, presumably players who would be lesser than Paul George. Now, it was a huge commitment from the Warriors because they would have not only signed George, for taken his 1 year, and they would have added four to it. It would have been 5 years for the Warriors because it had to be a trade. His contract had to exist for them to acquire him. He went as a free agent to the 76ers for 4 years because that's the max he can sign for. So it was kind of like money either way, but with the Warriors were extremely frustrated for exactly what he brings up. The Clippers could have got something for Paul George from the Warriors. That was not nothing. Wiggins, picks, whatever. But they did not want the money. They didn't want to take that back, that money. And I get it. I understand, though, the Warriors' incredible frustration because Paul George wanted to come to the Warriors. They thought they had a package. And, you know, and Anthony Slater just reported Draymond saying that it was not only just Paul George. It was Paul George and Lauri Markkanen. You could have in some way try to get both, and it would have been had to be Lauri Markkanen forcing it in some ways. That's what the Warriors were trying to do to get him. I did not know it was Paul George and Lauri Markkanen if they could possibly do it. They would have taken either one of them, but they wanted both. That is the full Joe Lake of all in. Let's go everything in to try to maximize the Steph final years, which is what every Warrior fan screams, maximize the Steph prime years, maximize the Steph prime. And yes, I get it. That would have been it. They couldn't pull it off, but this is why, you know, I always point out Steph has had many chances to not sign up with the Warriors for the full max for the full time. And he does it every single time, including this year, adding 1 year to the extension, which takes him for three more years to coincide with the Draymond extension. He just wants to see them try to do this stuff. If you keep trying, you're going to land somebody like they got Durant in 2016. But
that was almost 10 years ago. That was almost 10 years ago. Okay.
I know it gets scary when I start going through that stuff.
It's almost been a decade.
Almost a decade of many, many things going on with the Warriors, many, many things going on with Kevin Durant. But if you keep trying to do stuff, you keep exploring it, you're going to get somebody. They think they still can get somebody maybe in February, maybe in July. That's when maybe the Lauri Markkanen name comes back up. Although I've been looking at those box scores, Markkanen is not really putting up great numbers with Utah currently. Obviously, that could change. He would fit the Warriors very, very well. But they try to do stuff. They do. And they were extremely frustration. There was extreme frustration when they could not get Paul George when the Clippers let him go for nothing. But, you know, I understood the Clippers. They just didn't want to take back a lot of money for something they thought was not as valuable as what it would take. So, yeah, no, that is an expression that I heard many, many times in the Warriors front office. It just didn't work out. And the Clippers just beat them, by the way. The Clippers just beat the Warriors. So at some point you can't say the Clippers are just stupid. You know, they had another plan.
Just sounds like relationships, right?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it does. Maybe it does.
Okay. This is an interesting one that we have next, Tim. It's from Didn't Leave a Name.
No, yeah, I put that in there. There was no name on this
one. Oh, okay. I thought that was the name. But okay. Well, they did not leave a name on the Google voicemail. So the question is, I know you're from the Bay Area. You're a Bay Area native and am interested to hear about your early experiences in Japantown and your connection to the Abe family. One thing, can you first explain who the Abe family is?
Yeah, that's my mother's family, San Francisco, real institutions in the Japanese American community, big family. My mom was the youngest of, I think, five. Her brother, my uncle Victor, was a lawyer, famous office in Japantown. So we have very, very San Francisco family. In the Richmond district, it's where I spent a lot of time going up and down the streets, Clement Street, Gary Street, Gary Street. Okay, I can't even remember. But I did not spend a ton of time in Japan. A little bit, of course, stop in a little bit, but not a ton of time there. A little bit. I grew up in the Pine United Methodist Church, which is also in the Richmond, or far Richmond. So I spent most of my time there. Obviously, you do stuff in Japan.
I grew up at the Anaheim Japanese Free Methodist Church.
Yes, there you go. Nellie and I, the two Methodists here. We make this a Methodist show. I love Japan. I have since been a part of the Japanese Community Cultural Center. I have friends there. I have been part of many things they've done. So I think I'm a member now. So that's based in Japantown. I love Japantown. It had some rockier times economically, but now it's really coming back. It's kind of a model for San Francisco communities coming back. They got some really interesting shops there. They have really interesting food places there. I was back there not too long ago for the sushi. I forget where I had the sushi. It's incredible sushi. But what I remember from it was my uncle bringing back boxes of the mochi, Benkyodo, and it was really, really good mochi, and kind of got my taste for it there. That's what I remember more than anything. We didn't go there that often. I spent most of my time in the city, in the Richmond district, which I still love. I still end up there. And it's funny that Steve Curry isn't in the Richmond district. He's Studio Heights. But it's close enough. It's in that area. So he knows that area very well. So it's fun talking to him about that side of San Francisco. I currently live in San Francisco now, but way on the other side. I live by in between Chase Center and Oracle Park. Very nice area, kind of a growing area. But give me Richmond District every time. And the Shang-Chi and the movie spends a lot of time in the Richmond District. And I appreciated that part. There's other movies that have a major Richmond district. It's a great Chinese food, great community for that kind of thing. And that's maybe where I developed my love of Chinese food. But Janelle does not like Chinese food, as I've heard often many times. Not a Chinese food fan. Have you changed? Has that changed at all, Janelle?
It's okay.
Okay. Many times we went with our great friend, Mike Jin, and I would always want Chinese food. And Janelle, Chinese food again.
Much love to Mike.
Wow, the great Mike. Yeah, we miss him. And yes. Him, the Dodger, yes. Such a huge Dodger fan. I feel like there's a little cosmic karma for us to lose Mike in January and or December. Yeah, it was December. And the Dodgers win the World Series, hopefully.
Oh, I know. For him. Yep, yes. Okay, my question to you. Do you think the Dodgers should lose the next two games so they can win the World Series in Los Angeles?
They should not try to do this. No, they should not.
I think you're going to end up in New York winning. I mean, come on. Like,
I think it's fun to have a World Series win on your home field. I agree. And after the, you know, the pandemic World Series they won, which was in Texas, right? And there was even no parade. Mm-hmm. There will be explosion. I get the energy of it. But, you know, of the worst four championships there, only one happened in their home arena, three others, two in Cleveland and one in Boston. But those are special too. Maybe not as special to the fan base, but I think players like winning it in hostile places. They enjoy that celebration. And in the way it sets up with two more games in New York, because we're recording this on Tuesday morning, we got game four tonight. If the Dodgers lose, I thought game five tomorrow. I understand. Okay. I think the energy in the Dodgers stadium has been terrific tonight. Have you been watching? I mean, it's been amazing.
Oh my gosh, it's been amazing. And but so wait,
it'd be great. But you try to win whenever you can. You cannot start letting go of the rope, and you try to win it as soon as you can. Janelle, you got another point here. Go.
Yes. No. Based on that. When's the last time a team in the World Series did a four-game sweep?
I'm trying to not.
You love these stats. You love
these
stats.
That's, you threw that one at me with no preparation.
This is like, let's see what you know.
Well, I know the Giants did it in seven in Kansas City. Did it? Oh, wait, no. Did they sweep the Tigers? Yeah, I think the Giants swept the Tigers. That might have been the last one. I don't know. And people can correct. I'm doing this off the top of my head. Janelle just throws this at me.
You're Mr. Trivia.
I don't know if that was the last sweep. I think it was one of the most recent. And I do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because the Giants go to Detroit and face Verlander in game three and Pablo Sandoval. No, that was game one. Sandoval hits the home runs. I think that was a sweep. And it was either four or five games. And that was 2012. Would probably not be the most recent one. And tell me again how long ago that is, Jill. Tell me how long ago that is. But one of the recent sweeps. And my God, I might have to issue a correction very quickly after this one if I figure out it's wrong. But you put me on the spot and I answered the way I answered. I will live with it. I'll freaking live with it, Janelle.
It's all right. This has been great.
You got anything else for me, Janelle? We got any more questions?
Go Dodgers! Sweep them in four. Yes, game on.
Any other Janelle questions for me?
No, that's it. I just wanted to get your advice on the Dodgers. You know,
yeah,
a little Southern California stuff.
Don't let it go. Win it when you can win it. Because once you start losing games, then it kind of builds up. We saw it happen in that ALCS when the Yankees had 3-0 lead over the Red Sox and lose one. The Red Sox just don't let us win one. You win one, then you win another, and then the pressure starts building and building, and you don't necessarily want that to happen. So
no, we don't.
You could give one up. You know what? You know, if it was like basketball, if the Dodgers lost this one, you'd be coming back home for game five. And then that's the way you want to win it. Yes. But that there's two more games in New York, I just don't think you want to give up two games. You want to win it. Listen, if it happens that way and they end up winning it in LA in game six or seven, all the, you know, more drama. But
and traffic.
Traffic. There's traffic no matter what. You know, it doesn't matter if it's a Dodger game or not.
Let's not have six sporting events going on the same day.
No, I think you should. I think it's always good for you. Let's make sure there's more concerts and more games all happening at the very same time in LA. Yeah. You can't. I drive around there, Janelle, and you know that. And it's like, there's traffic all the time. Like, not more traffic. It's just constant traffic. That's LA. You live with it. You learn.
Well, they call it the Carmageddon. It has a name.
Side streets. Side streets, Janelle. Side streets. That's life. No. That's life. All right. I think we've come to the end of it. We did 33 minutes of this. I think it worked. You fine with this, Janelle? You think it worked okay? You want to do this again?
This is fun.
Okay, great. We'll cull more questions. We'll get more interesting stuff. But I thank everyone who asked the questions this time. Of course, I thank Janelle Hamabata for her debut on the TK Show. Not the first time listening. Will you listen to this one too, Janelle? I hope you do. Listen to it in your car when you're driving around. But
when I'm driving on my side streets, I sure will.
Through Carmageddon. first time on the show will not be the last time for Janelle on the show, I guarantee you. And thank you all for listening. Thanks again, Janelle, for helping me out, carrying the show. I appreciate it.
Mahalo. Thanks, Tim.
Bye-bye. Show for today.
Bye.